Paper Flower Consortium, Episode 16. Vampires Make Ghastly Pets. Recording by Loretta Fabrana-Foy, former Lady of the Kingdom of France, current historian and librarian of the Paper Flower Consortium. Welcome back, beloved initiates and other listeners. Tonight, we shall discuss pets and the strict laws against turning animals into vampires. This is the story of two ancient horse vampires. So be warned. Innocent horses die and are reborn in the telling. I will also touch on our beloved Dash, who met death, though Derek was tempted to transform her. So I understand if you fear to listen. This is a terrible subject, I know. However, I hope you listen carefully, because this is incredibly important. I remind initiates, since vampirism is a virus transmitted by blood and other bodily fluids, there are several misconceptions, or even old wives' tales. One of which is why most vampires don't keep pets, especially short-lived pets. Some believe the animal will sense our predatory nature and run away, but that isn't true. After all, in many cultures, humans also eat meat. Some eat blood. Humans are also predators, also hunters. The reason most vampires do not keep pets is the pain of loss. Before the 1921 initiation laws forbade such things, history shows us several vampires tried to transform their animals so their sweet, unconditional love and acceptance might be as eternal as they. While some were successful, most animal transformations are tried and failed. Now, the vampire virus doesn't seem to infect reptiles. Or, if they can be infected, they die quickly. Perhaps it is because they need the warmth of the sun to function. I have said before that this is unclear to us. History shows us small animals, mammals, insects, birds, bats, do not survive the transformation. Though many think bats can be turned, these are little, tiny animals, and they die quickly. House cats and small dogs can transform, but their transformations have a high 83% failure rate. And this is generally because the vampire takes too much blood in such a small little mammal, and the animal exsanguinates. The animals with the best survival rate are primarily horses and large dogs, that is, dogs over 100 pounds. I personally have seen only one transformed animal. A beautiful war horse, once part of the Roman cavalry, the magnificent Nyx. He was born an animal who ate grass and grain, but death brought him back as a monster. His eerie neighs and snorts reverberate into one's soul. To see Nyx in person is to be dumbstruck by his great beauty and terrible countenance. As a former war horse, he was built for carrying armed men into battle. His muscles ripple under his black coat. Unlike humanesque vampires, Nyx cannot, or chooses not, to retract his fangs. Yet, Gaius jokes that Nyx is a hidden unicorn. And indeed, he can be quite docile. In 2019, before the pandemic shut everything down, Norma went to Europe on a job. And she said the only sad thing about coming home was leaving Nyx. She said his coat felt like the softest velvet. And Norma isn't the only teenage girl that Nyx loves. Even after Gaius stopped loving his former concubine Julia, Nyx never did. For over a century, Nyx allowed her to groom him and braid his mane, and whenever he saw her, he would happily trot up to her and nuzzle her. And sometimes I regret when I was a girl of 17 and had the opportunity to have pet the beast. I did not. You see, I was still a human and frightened of those stomping hooves and snapping fangs. After all, Nyx only eats meat and drinks only blood, and I was filled with both. Imagine a giant dog who nips when he is happy, and you will understand my fear. Gaius was there, so he would have ensured I had been transformed. But, and I'm not ever quite sure how to say this, the Paperfly Consortium's relationship with our progenitor has always been complicated. I simply did not know Gaius well enough to trust him with my safety. And it is not just teenage girls Nyx adores. Even though, centuries ago, Jacob actually stabbed Gaius in the chest, Nyx has always let Jacob touch him. It is possible, with so many battles and violence of his existence, Nyx cannot or does not associate Jacob with violence. Or perhaps he thinks of him as another brother in arms. Perhaps it is because Gaius has forgiven his progeny due to the circumstances of the stabbing. Nyx also considers Jacob forgiven. Obviously, Nyx cannot tell us what he thinks, but he prances right up to Jacob. Jacob has always had a way with horses. Let us begin the story of Nyx, who begins with the story of Gaius. Gaius still claims he has had two great loves in his existence. One is his former concubine, Philippa, a former witch turned vampire who eventually usurped him due to his cruelty to other concubines. And of course, the other is Nyx, his eternal companion. Now, Gaius doesn't quite remember the year he was born, but it was the 4th century BC. Gaius's father was a senator and well known for breeding chariot horses. Gaius claims he had a happy childhood. He was well loved by both of his parents and siblings. At 13, he left to join the service, and with his history with horses, he was sent to the newly formed cavalry. Gaius had already done one tour of duty when he returned home to his father's estate and met the yearling Nyx. The black horse was originally planned for the chariots, but he did not really take to the training. And any good horseman knows you don't force a horse to do anything. Gaius asked his father to let him take the horse for the cavalry, which at this point needed several types of horses. So even if the foal could not be trained for war, there were other jobs he might do. Gaius's father agreed, and Nyx flourished in the cavalry. And the two, Gaius and Nyx, were inseparable brothers at arms. Gaius was an excellent general and won many battles, or at least he won more than he lost. After several more accomplishments, Gaius was ultimately given control over the Carpathians, which were under Roman rule for centuries. As for the year they were reborn, Gaius claims that Nyx was close to 10 years old, which would have made him close to 30. And one night he became a vampire because he slept with the wrong woman. Philippa even had warned him to be careful, but he ignored her good advice. As a vampire, Gaius turned Nyx, along with the rest of his legion, and his witch and concubine Philippa. He told his soldiers to transform their horses. Many did die, but at first Nyx had several horse companions too. In 1509, when Agata met them, only Nyx and Fidelis had survived the lean years. The rest were gone, sacrificed to feed the other vampires. The soldiers and their mounts were immortalized for their service to Gaius, but there were also hundreds of concubines who were just bled and thrown into the sun. This multitude of vampire death, Gaius ultimately created treaties with the nearby counties to station himself as a protector. Even after the Roman Empire fell, he became the legatus of the mountains. And though many things happened during these centuries, but as this is the story of Nyx's fate, let us go to the 20th century and World War II. Because, of course, now people don't ride horses into battle. Nyx was left behind when Gaius fought with the French Resistance, which was hard on the man, but even harder on the horse. Nyx once had an existence and a purpose, and it was gone. No one was ready for the destruction which World War II caused. though Gaius and his legion saw it coming and tried to warn us in the other covens. When the bombs fell, the elderly, women, and children were killed by the thousands. Some of the impacts were so great that people were lifted up into the air. Thousands more were injured. Millions were made homeless. But let us not get sidetracked. One night, in the town where Gaius housed Nyx, which I will not name, was bombed, and the structure which housed Nyx collapsed on him. Nyx brayed and kicked his way out of the falling stone and timber. But now in the night, the poor brute was terrified by the sounds of bombs hitting other buildings, by people screaming. He raced across town with other horses and rampaging livestock, only to be met by machine guns. You see, German soldiers were mowing down fleeing civilians and their animals. If the bombs didn't kill, the guns would, and for any who escaped, they would face starvation. We know from Gaius that Nyx was hit with at least 3 rounds. However, unlike other animals, Nyx was already dead and could not be killed again. He reared up and his hooves came down upon his assailants. The machine gun was found crushed, as was one of the operators. The other was not found with the gun. You see, Nyx had taken the other gunman and found himself a grotto and began to eat him in order to heal his pains. And back in town, Gaius dug into the old barn with his hands and could not find his beloved Nyx. Eventually, Gaius left his body and found him eating a soldier. By the man's defensive wounds on his hands, it was obvious the man had been alive when Nyx dug into his flesh. Gaius paced the day away, and then he heard the Germans whisper about a demon horse that they had seen the night before, one that had been shot but wouldn't fall. They had planned on capturing it for Hitler. With very little fanfare, Gaius spirited Nyx deeper into the countryside, which was still bombed, but to a lesser extent. Of course, the law states if he bites anyone, he will be destroyed. If he changes anyone, he will be destroyed. And Nyx had eaten someone. However, just as Gaius was busy with World War II, so was the council. Gaius moved Nyx again and again to keep the poor animal safe and away from the bombing. It did little good. And after the war, Gaius returned to Hamburg to ensure that they would be on the West Germany side of the border. I am allowed to tell this story because Nyx was tried by the council after World War II, but he was found innocent of any wrongdoing. After all, he was simply defending himself. For Nyx might not have human intelligence, but he does have horse sense, and of course he always knows an enemy. Gaius has wondered several times over the last century if he should destroy the animal and allow Nyx to experience the freedom of death. Nyx exists in a comfortable treed pasture and an attached barn outside an unnamed European city. Gaius's legion does not understand why Gaius keeps the lovely creature. But Nyx loves Gaius, and Gaius loves Nyx. Over the centuries, he has been stabled at times, so the stable does not bother him. But he is lonely, except when Gaius is home and comes for their nightly ride. Just as a side note, Romans rode their horses at the time without stirrups, which would come later from Asia. So Nyx does not like stirrups, which is one of the reasons he will not let most ride him. Perhaps that's why the old stallion likes young women and girls. His horse sense has taught him that they want to pet him, braid his mane, and give him bits of meat. They don't threaten him with machine guns and bombs. But it is a sad existence for a horse, I should think. And now I shall tell even a sadder story. In 1509, Philippa usurped Gaius. The two vampire horses were split apart. Nyx is an expensive pet for eternity, but what happened to Fidelis was much worse. And in this, I speak of Agatha's vengeance against the vampire who infected her with a vampire virus and destroyed her beloved life. Nicola was a cruel lech of a man, and this ultimately got him killed, as Agatha saw the only way to regain her honor was through vengeance. Agatha would have her vengeance against Nicola, but there were costs. And part of that cost was paid for by an innocent beast. For his cruelty and lechery, Nicola was cut in small pieces, doused with oil and burned. And then his ashes were burnt 6 more times in hot flames. Agatha, too, felt the severing of the bloodline, and she too suffered. But she knew what was happening. Poor Fidelis did not. While this was happening, though in pain, Gaius escaped with Nyx and rode away before any of his vampiric concubines or human servants tried to kill him. Fidelis, who was panicked as he was experiencing the dying of his creator Nicola, was left behind. Once Fidelis recovered the severing of the bloodline, though he did seem to wander from time to time looking for Nicola, Gaius, or Nyx, he seemed happy enough racing through the mountains with Sylvia. As the vampires had for centuries, Sylvia kept pacts with the surrounding counties, who gave them sacrificial animals for protection. However, as the Ottoman Empire moved west, eventually the old pacts between the counts and vampires dissolved. The vampire coven no longer had soldiers, as Gaius had eaten them in the lean times. And though Sylvia was a strong horsewoman, none of the women were fighters. They only had one manservant and some children at the time, so they didn't even have a human who might negotiate with the Ottomans. The old packs fell and food grew scarce. Sylvia took to hunting humans for food, which Fidelis loved. However, eventually, they closed their doors to the outside world, locking in a few humans with them. Fidelis' territory was now just the courtyard of the mountain fort. And apparently sometime in the early 17th century, he rebelled from this existence. He could not stay trapped in the fort's garden. The poor horse kicked out of his stable several times, until he got out during the day and tried to immolate himself. I will repeat now what some may have forgotten. Vampires cannot have an easy death. Vampires can be injured beyond any human measure, or in this case, horse measure. Vampires may be roasted by the sun, but unless the sun burns everything, we regenerate and reanimate. And what does this mean? It means that apparently night came before the giant war horse found final death. His once beautiful gray coat was burnt and smoldering and exposed patches of scorched, blistered flesh underneath. Foamy saliva dripped from his mouth. His hooves were cracked and torn. And this went on for days and nights. Sylvia and Julia tried to make him comfortable, tried to make him understand that he must stay within the garden. But as Fidelis was only a horse, he could not. In the night, he began to heal, and in the day, he would burn again. Perhaps the hottest and longest summer day, he might be able to burn himself. But not that year. His eyes grew filled with rage and pain. Adrenaline coursed through his veins, and he reverted to wildness. And as all vampires do when they get hungry, the lust for running through the mountains overtook him. And he jumped over the stone wall. He toppled down to the other side. The sounds of his cracking bones were horrifying. But as he was a vampire, he shook himself off and limped away into the darkest forest. Sylvia killed a man and tried to attempt Fidelis home with the corpse. And at first it looked like she may be successful, and indeed, she almost got a bridle snapped upon him, but then he bit off her hand, which thankfully, though mangled, was complete and was reattached later. Fidelis bolted. Sylvia, along with Julia, hunted him and knows where and what he is. And Gaius has looked down the bloodline and found him as well. Fidelis is now a beast of legend, a land-based kelpie, if you will. He sleeps in a cave, but if any human or animal comes near, he tempts those he sees and drags them back into his lair. Thankfully, the land he lives on has fallen into a nationalized trust of Romania. Let us hope it stays that way, because it means human prey is rare. Whatever the species, if they are lucky, they die quickly. We have heard Fidelis loves to rip out the soft skin of the cheeks first, and delights in squishing eyes between his teeth. Of course, with this social media generation, some have tried to find him. Such easy prey, even stand still while they try to capture photos or videos. And by the time they realize the danger, it doesn't matter. Because a horse can outrun a human, and a vampire horse can outrun a human on uneven ground, even when they have a motorized mount. Fidelis cannot be fooled by any human trickery. An ancient vampire can hear a heartbeat over a motor. And a vampire horse knows no mercy. If you are wise, you will never try to find him. And if you are not, you will die. Finally, I will make a personal observation. I thank God, though Derek was tempted to transform our old sweet sheepdog Dash, which was still legal at the time, he did not. Dash originally belonged to Jacob's enthralled human, Luke. She came with us from Europe to America. After Luke's death, Derek, who loved the sweet creature, took her on. Though she was friendly to all of us, she loved Derek best. And of course she aged alongside him as he grew into a man. She slept with him in his coffin, and after he and Pascaline were married, Dash slept between them each day. If you remember our sixth lesson, it was Dash who comforted Derek when he was transformed into a vampire and telepathy battered his brain. When Dash had turned 11, she was still quite spry. But Derek began to see the signs of her aging and knew she would not have many more years on this world. Jacob understood as he went through the same process with his warhorse Castor. Now he ultimately gave Castor the gift of death and suggested Derek do the same with Dash. Dash lived 2 more years, and as her coat grew more white and her running pounce became a walk, Derek grew more tempted. One evening, when Dash was 13, she could not rise out of the coffin. Derek lifted her out. Agatha rubbed her legs, and Dash was able to temporarily walk again. But by sunrise, she was immobile again. The next night, the same. Derek asked to be left alone as he brought Dash into the pasture where our dog had enjoyed running. He bit into the dog's artery, and she half-heartedly snapped at him in an animal instinct. Every second, Derek was tempted to cut open his wrist and give blood to the dying creature. And then Dash's heart stopped, and she breathed her last. Derek wrapped the dog's body in a quilt. He dug a hole and prayed over her. This was to be the last hole, indeed the last manual labor he ever did. His last link to his human life had been snuffed out, but he said he was glad he did not act in selfish depravity. Yet he mourned her for a long time after. Now, to be clear, Derek has never been unkind to an animal. Indeed, he is very gentle with them. He refused any pets in his home. When she was a girl, Norma was not allowed an animal companion. And even now, his enthralled humans aren't allowed to keep pets other than fish. Some may call this heartless. But for Derek, the temptation of transformation is too great. The decision to keep pets or working animals is a personal one. All vampires must decide for themselves if they can overcome that temptation, along with the understanding the coven will not be merciful to those who break this law. And now, a word from our sponsor. Tonight's episode was brought to you by Norma's Cleaning Service. Messy hunt? Unexpected worshippers? Or are you just an elderly housebound monster caught up in a pandemic? Norma and her crew of undead are licensed and bonded private detectives and house cleaners. They fix and clean up all types of situations, from getting groceries into your pantry to stopping a coven-wide blood feud. Problems will either be cleaned up to your satisfaction or you will never have a problem again. Call tonight or download the app. There will not necessarily be a question or answer period tonight because any question you ask on this topic has one answer. Since 1921, a vampire cannot make a vampire out of anything other than a consenting adult human over age 25, following the Coven and International guidelines. Even if it is accidental, we will destroy any Coven vampire who converts anyone outside the guidelines. It is the ultimate cruelty to turn anyone without permission. Though animals love us with a full heart, they cannot consent. Fidelis would have never wanted to be parted from Nicola, and yet they were parted. And now the world has turned away from working animals to machines. I fear, as should you all, what Nyx might become if anything should ever happen to Gaius. I will also add that children and adolescent humans cannot consent. Norma herself admits that she got lucky that Derek and Pascaline raised her with such kindness, and that the coven paid for her education. Otherwise, she might have faced the fate that other vampires turn to young faced. A different girl from a different time or a different culture might not have survived. I have a number of histories of girls and boys who have cast themselves into the flames after they were transformed by an older vampire. Even if you are one of my children, I will not show you mercy. Before I close, I will remind you to please refer to the lesson, Lies of the Creator, for exact details of what we did to William. So that's all there is tonight. Next time I will speak of the shock of losing one's reflection. Good night, beloved initiates, and sleep the sleep of the dead. If you have questions or comments for Lady Loretta, please contact her at info@paperflowerconsortium.com or through the Paperflower Consortium's Patreon. You can check out upcoming topics either there or on the website. If you love this podcast, like and share this episode. Please consider donating either one time or through the Patreon. The Paperflower Consortium podcast was written and performed by Elizabeth Gazzetti. You can learn more about her books, including the books which feature vampires in the same universe, by going to elizabethgazzetti.com. The amazing intro and outro music was written by Evan Witt, and you can learn more about his music at www.wittynotes.com. Thank you for listening!